micro bite.
Hello, welcome to Microbyte. This is The Register's weekly chomp through Microsoft with myself, Gavin Clark, software editor at The Register, and Mary Jo Foley.
Hi, just to do a quick introduction of myself, I'm the editor of the All About Microsoft blog on ZDNet, and I'll be working with Gavin on this regular show, so I'm really excited to be doing that.
This is, as Mary Jo said, this is it's a regular gig, and we're going to be taking a chomp through the Microsoft ecosystem and biting off bite-sized pieces and seeing, you know, discussing them and putting it under the microscope. And we're going to be taking, importantly, questions from you, listeners and readers. So, MJ, PDC, the Professional Developers Conference, is coming up, and I think we both decided that'd be a good place to start, didn't we?
Yes. I think there's a lot of interesting things that we're going to be seeing at the PDC at the end of this month. And one of the things I'm most interested to see is how Microsoft ends up positioning its whole cloud strategy. Because Microsoft, unlike some of the other players in the space, has said almost nothing about what it's going to do as far as having a cloud operating environment, how it's going to offer cloud services to developers. And I think we're going to see all of that kind of presented in a nutshell at the PDC so that we can have the big picture overview.
Right. So there's, I mean, for those who don't really know, I mean, often PDC, we know what it is, but, you know, PDC is a pretty big event for Microsoft, isn't it? I mean, last few years, I mean, was it 2003, Gates, you know, kind of unveiled Vista for whatever that turned out to be, and then .NET was unveiled in the year 2000. So it's kind of the place where it's the big come to Jesus event, really, isn't it, PDC?
It is, and it's also interesting because Microsoft hasn't had a PDC in a few years. They postponed it for a year last year. So there's a lot of pent-up announcements and demand, things people have been waiting for a long time that are all supposedly going to come to light at this one.
And it kind of affects the roadmap for, like, what, the next three to 5 years, roughly, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. So you touched on cloud computing there. Now, let's kind of get into that a little bit. What are you hearing, what are you reporting on in terms of cloud computing from Microsoft that we're going to see at PDC?
Yeah, I think what we're going to see, just based on what you can pick up from the agenda that's online for the PDC already, is Microsoft's definitely going to announce the operating system level cloud platform that it's been working on for years. Mm. And
whether that is that Midori?
No. This is Strata, which is a new code name that we haven't really heard about so far. But we're thinking it's codenamed Strata because Strata refers to, like, the layers in the earth. And the way, if you look at how Microsoft's building its cloud platform, it's a bunch of layers, one on top of another. So the bottom layer is going to be some version or some adaptation of Windows Server. Mm. And that's what's going to run in the Microsoft data centers where they're going to try to get people to host their applications. So that's going to be level one. And it's a little bit unclear right now if Strata is the same thing that people have been reporting on that's codenamed Red Dog. Because those two might be the same. They might be somehow related. It's all kind of murky still. You know, Microsoft's not giving out any hints. But that's like the base level thing that we're going to hear about.
Now let's stop you there, because, I mean, you know, like you said, there's a lot of code words. Like, I think it's Midori, there's, you know, it's Strata, there's Red Dog. It's a code name factory, that company. So are these just, like, are these all the same thing? Are these different things? And, you know, a lot of people are getting very hot under the collar about this being the, you know, the next version of Windows, the, you know, post Windows. Or it sounds to me, it's just like, really, you know, another word for high performance computing, you know, Windows with a few extra scalability bits thrown in, and some REST state stuff maybe too.
Yeah. Again, this is a little bit hard to know what all these code names refer to because Microsoft's not really helping at all. So what I think, this is just based on kind of my sources and what I've been putting together over time, but I don't think Midori has anything to do with this whatsoever. Mm. I don't even think they're going to say the word Midori at the PDC. Midori's like way out there, like so far out there that they think it's not even in the next 3 years. It's like way out.
What is it? And is it like, in that case, is it kind of analogous to Blackcomb in that you never actually get there?
Yeah, but you never get there. They might not like that characterization, but I think we're going to get to Midori at some point. Yeah, like you're saying, Gavin, you're right. It's like the all things to all people, distributed computing, parallel computing, platform in a cloud. There's some stateful stuff that's part of it. There's going to be .NET stuff that's part of it. But it's all very amorphous, and we only know bits and pieces. So let's just put Midori to the side for now and say in the nearer term, which they are going to talk about at the PDC, is this cloud operating system that has nothing to do with Midori. So the cloud operating system is basically more like how Microsoft provides a hosted environment for developers to put their applications in the cloud.
Now, this is sounding awfully a lot like Amazon. I'm going to say, like, this is Amazon. What is going on here? Why are they, is it more me too-ism from Microsoft?
It's definitely going to parallel Amazon's strategy very closely, although Microsoft, of course, will never say they're doing what Amazon is doing. Mm. But if you put Amazon, a picture of what Amazon's doing on one side and put a picture of what Microsoft's doing on the other side, you could definitely draw parallels. Mm. Like, if I was drawing two diagrams in this imaginary space in front of me here in my home office, I would put, where you see Amazon's Elastic Compute Cloud, I would say the equivalent to that is Windows Strata.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go up a level or so, like all of the things that are in like the Amazon Web Services category, I might say the equivalent to that is Windows Live Services.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something else we're going to hear a lot about at the PDC. Like, what are those foundational building blocks that Microsoft's going to make available to developers. If you go up another level, I'd say the next level up is Amazon providing a hosted database capability in the cloud. Mm. And there we've got Microsoft SQL Server Data Services. So if you put the two side by side, they're definitely both doing the same thing. They both are talking to some extent about virtualization being part of the platform. Mm. And so that's going to be another piece of it that we're going to hear how that fits in. But it's like we can't draw the complete diagram yet because it's kind of still a work in progress, and not just for us understanding it, but for them like figuring out how to tell us, I think.
The thing I find interesting here is that people, especially in Silicon Valley, will say, why would you want to bother with Microsoft? It's irrelevant these days. Where it seems to me that, because we've already got Amazon, for example, where it seems to me they might be late in the game, but there's a huge market of people out there who will adopt whatever Microsoft comes out with because it's Microsoft,
Yeah.
The big example I think of was I think Windows was kind of... A lot of ISPs, service providers, and hosts used to put their host websites and blogs on Linux and Unix, and Windows suddenly became very affordable to them, and they actually never been moved to offering a Windows offering. And I see the kind of a same metaphor there, that it might be late to the game, but there will be a huge contingent of people who will move to it because they've got the Windows skills, or they like programming with Windows, and they like using Microsoft applications.
Yeah, for sure. And, another piece of this that we're trying to figure out, how does this all fit in, is the whole live mesh and live framework that Microsoft's also going to announce formally at the PDC. And this is a connection I'm very tenuous on. Like, how does live mesh fit into the bigger cloud platform / picture? But it's going to be a key theme of the PDC because it's Ray Ozzie's baby. It's his pet project. He's going to be the lead off keynoter at the PDC. Yeah. So we're going to hear a lot about mesh and the mesh programming framework.
Well, that's interesting because, Ozzie's, in my view, he's kind of a, it might be simplistic, but he's kind of a one-trick pony. He gave us distributed computing and collaboration with Notes, and then he kind of reworked the same idea with Groove. I wonder whether that's all he's got and we're getting a similar kind of thing again, and whether his talents in this area are being slightly overplayed.
Yeah. I keep thinking when I first heard about Live Mesh, I remember thinking this is Groove all over again. Like, this is a more fleshed out Groove, but it's still Groove. It's how you have online offline access for a multitude of devices and how you synchronize against the cloud. So I am interested to see if they can kind of broaden the mission of Live Mesh beyond just being a synchronization framework, which is all we understand it to be right now.
I think it's interesting that two things about Ozzie. He's going to be, this I think is his first massive outing as as the chief software architect for Microsoft, and I don't think he's addressed an audience as large as PDC ever before on behalf of Microsoft. So he's going to be wanting to stamp his authority and really kind of say, I am Ozzie, this is the vision. It'd be interesting to see whether he can rally people behind that. And then also, I think well, he's going to set the vision. It's interesting, you know, it's very much a case of Beauty and the Beast. His vision is the Beauty, and the Beast will be Bob Muglia, who's SVP of Server and Tools, who basically will come in as he ever does and prevent the very nitty gritty, the nuts and bolts of, okay, and these are the tools, these are the servers, these are the tools we're going to use to get there.
Yeah, definitely. I think Muglia's mission is going to be kind of to translate Aussie into language that developers can understand.
Precisely.
Because whenever you hear Aussie speak, it's always like up in the cloud, no pun intended. You kind of leave and you go, huh? What did he just say? And Muglia, like you said, total nuts and bolts. Like, he's going to say, okay, guys, here's an architectural diagram. Here's what Red Dog or Strata is. Here's the layers. Here's where virtualization fits in. And that's how we're going to have it.
Our first guest on the show is kind of has a very big interest in live mesh, doesn't he?
Yes. His name is Kip Nixon, and he is with Liveside.net. They over at Liveside.net have been ahead of everybody else in their reporting about Live Mesh and Red Dog and all these components.
To begin with, I think, you know, Live Mesh itself, just being able to sync from device to device is a big bet for Microsoft. There may be some kind of surprise announcements around things that they've built with what they're now calling the Live Framework. I think they're separating Live Mesh as kind of a product from the Live Framework as an underlying platform for not only Microsoft but other developers to be able to build things with the Live Framework to be able to sync devices up all over the place, including the cloud, but device to device, and, you know, so and devices including Macintosh and including mobile devices.
What do you think Microsoft's going to offer that's going to be significantly better or different to what's out there already?
Well, the idea is that that Live Mesh works with what was originally called SSE, or Shared Server Extensions, which is now that they're calling the feed sync, which basically is taking an RSS feed and then extending the RSS to be able to wrap any kind of file with RSS and then be able to sync it that way.
Right.
And so basically, it isn't most of the other ways of syncing have kind of built their own, maybe not proprietary, but own kind of little ways of syncing your device and doing all that. This is a pretty open system. So if you're dealing in RSS and XML and you're just syncing it across. And so it makes it very easy to work with once it works.
Will it be worth people looking at seriously in the future, do you think?
I think so. I think that it there's still some question as to whether or not this whole thing is going to work the way that it was envisioned.
Hmm.
From what I've been able to understand, most of the, you know, there have been some issues. Those are kind of early beta or whatever issues. Most of those have been ironed out or are being ironed out. You know, the underlying platform seems to work mm-hmm. well. One of the things that it seems to be pretty good at, it will be kind of cross-platform type of stuff, so you won't have to, you know, you won't have to write a completely new Mac client, or you won't have to write a completely new Android client, or any of that kind of stuff. It should be able, you know, if you're dealing with these basic RSS building blocks, you should be able to plug that in pretty quickly. So, and then as well to be able to plug it in pretty quickly to things like S3 or any other kind of cloud storage device, including the Microsoft version, which, you know, I mean, the consumer front end to that would be SkyDrive.
Right.
Yeah, I'm really confused, and where I'm hoping we get more clarity at the PDC is around how Microsoft's cloud platform, whatever that is, if it's Red Dog or Strata or whatever that is, fits with Live Mesh as a development platform. Because I feel like I understand the consumer side of Live Mesh, you know, that it's meant to be like a synchronization and collaboration framework. But once we start talking about Mesh as a platform or the Live framework, that's where I'm like, okay, how does that fit in with .NET? And how's that going to fit in, you know, with their bigger story around cloud computing and the whole idea that you will only need to know one programming model to write apps that span the desktop to the cloud?
Now, is this a classic case of the marketing people take the basic technology and they run with it and they get everything all confused? Because Microsoft's got a great tradition of applying labels to everything and then retracting them. They did that with .NET. So do you think we're kind of seeing a, you know, platform-itis here again with this?
One of the things that is going to be, will come out at PDC will be some, they're working on some tools for Visual Studio to be able to quite easily, it's from what it sounds like, be able to plug stuff into and be able to work, start working with Live Mesh on your own and be able to develop products with Live Mesh within Visual Studio, plugging it into to all of the, you know, .NET goodness that you can get from C# and those kinds of things quite easily, just drag and drop and you've meshified your application. And another big ish, or a big part of Live Mesh, really, what we've seen so far is syncing files between devices so that you have your, you know, you have your Word document and you want it on your laptop and you drop it in a Live Mesh folder and it goes over to the laptop. That's fine. But what they're really counting on being much more than that is to be able to sync applications between. So when you set up your, when you set up Photoshop on your desktop and you've got it just the way you want it, you sync that over to your other devices. And so then when you turn on your laptop, Photoshop is set up the way you want it to be. And you don't have to, you don't have to go through. And if you make a change on one end, then it reflects in the other end. But this whole Live Mesh and Live framework is really a lot more than just folder share. There's a lot more than just moving a file from one to another. It's syncing your devices so that when you turn on your laptop or when you log into your you're in a hotel and you log into a hotel computer and you sign into Live Mesh, there's Photoshop and there's all the things you use and they're all set up the way you're used to having them set up.
How credible is this? I mean, you know, getting a browser to work the same, you know, across different mobile devices is bad enough, you know, let alone having all your preferences in Photoshop appearing across every single desktop or PC that you log in, or even let alone bringing Max into the equation. How, you know, this sounds like it's getting quite granular.
That's what we'll see starting at PDC, I think. I mean, the basics are there, and really, really what they've, you know, at this point, what they've done is, you know, the story is that they basically locked themselves in a room for 2 years and started from scratch and really started talking about how all this stuff is should work, and let's build it up, you know, not trying to plug it into existing products, but build something that works to begin with, and then figure out how to build a system around it. The question, you know, from our end, from kind of more the consumer end and not the developer end, it's how can I push a button and take my Office application and make it be meshified? And I think that there's going to be, you know, one of the questions that I've heard a lot about, you know, Live Mesh as a platform, and you'll be able to do this, and you'll be able to turn on Visual Studio and do all that. But how much is Microsoft going to build for consumers to make it easy for them to do the kinds of things that it's capable of doing without having to either rely on a third party, without having to rely on Adobe, you know, signing up for the whole deal? I mean, is Adobe going to really want to promote Live Mesh? That's a good question, I think. So So if they don't, then how easy is it for, or not only how easy is it for myself as a quasi-developer to do it, but how easy is it for a consumer to say, you know, are we going to do it? Or how much effort is Microsoft going to put into saying, okay, here's a package, you know, drop this on top of Photoshop and then it works.
So thanks, Kip. That was great. And, you know, it's not just going to be all about the cloud and live mesh, as we know. Day two at PDC, the big keynote supposedly going to be Steven Sinofsky talking about Windows 7. And it'll be interesting to see how much talking he actually does about Windows 7, since we haven't heard a whole lot from him or Microsoft so far about that product. But the word is at PDC, everybody who attends is going to get the Windows 7 pre-beta bits, and all bets are on it being one of the M3 builds, which is an internal Milestone 3 build from Microsoft, and that people will be able to play with it and start getting a feel for some of the things they're doing around Windows 7.
Now, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but I think there's a slight bit of an identity crisis going on at Microsoft this year with a tension between PDC and WinHack, which is coming on in a week or so after PDC. And from my point of view, looking at the sessions at PDC on Windows 7, they always seem to be fairly nuts and bolts. You know, there's nothing terrifically stimulating that says to me that, wow, this is a huge operating system release. I mean, those sessions at PDC, it's the nuts and bolts of how best practices for developing for Windows standard user, you know, building great audio communications applications, design principles for Windows 7. So it's real kind of stuff I'd really expect to see maybe at PDC, at WinHack rather than PDC. Are you kind of getting any big vision stuff, feedback in the, you know, back channel stuff on the big vision for Windows 7 from what you've heard?
No, and it is a little disconcerting because the other question is, what are those bits going to look like that they show and that they talk about? I mean, I will be very surprised if Microsoft talks about anything like dates for Windows 7 or actually like what they're going to do at the user interface level for Windows 7, because those are kind of like the things they are hoping to keep secret till the product launches. But without those, how much can developers really start to get a feel for now? You know, like you're saying, there are some really deep level sessions about some pretty esoteric parts of the operating system. I mean, which is stuff developers do care about, you know, but how helpful is it for you as a developer? I mean, can you even start targeting Windows 7 if you don't see the UI? There is one session I noticed on the agenda called Welcome to the Windows 7 Desktop, where it makes references to the fact that they're going to talk about the taskbar and the start menu and desktop elements. I think they may talk to some extent about the actual UI of Windows 7. I noticed there's a session on the agenda called Welcome to the Windows 7 Desktop.
Yeah.
And in that session, they say they're going to talk about things like enhancements to the taskbar, the start menu, and desktop elements. I mean, those are the things, if you're an app developer, you're going to care quite a bit about. I mean, you do care about, like, the, you know, the underlying printing APIs and the graphics APIs. You know, but Microsoft has said publicly they're not going to make a lot of deep-level changes to those things between Vista and Windows 7. So place where they are going to make changes, you'd think, is the UI, right?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, let's face facts. Vista was not a terribly exciting operating system. And they kind of said that initially, and yet they still tried to push it as the biggest thing in 10 years. And it seems like if that's the case, Windows 7 is not going to be is yet another not terribly exciting operating system as far as Microsoft goes. It feels like, you know, the design delta on Windows is now as wide as there's nothing really left to innovate.
Yeah, I think they're kind of in trouble with this whole thing they've been doing around major release and minor release.
Yeah.
You know, they've said every major release will be followed by a minor release. Well, to many people, like you're saying, Vista was a minor release. But Windows 7, you know, they're publicly saying it's going to be a major release. But when you look at the screenshots that have leaked so far and bits and pieces that have leaked so far, it does not seem like it's going to be a major release. It seems much more minor.
Now, I know we had a couple of email questions in around Windows 7, didn't we, from Josh Phillips and Long Zeng. And they had some questions. Do you want to just kind of read those off and then put in a contest of where you think, you know, do you think those kind of guys are going to be satisfied by what they hear at PDC?
Yep, Long Zhang, who is the guy behind the IStartedSomething.com blog, which you haven't, if you haven't checked that out, you definitely should.
Definitely,
he does a lot of great stuff around Windows. He asked what we think the Windows 7 user experience will mean to users and developers. And that's kind of like the crux of the whole PDC in a way. It's like, what will this whole UX user experience look like? You know, Microsoft stopped talking about user interface a few years back, and now they call the whole way that users interact with an operating system the user experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's everything from the taskbar to the start menu to how you call up an application, how you shut down, how the system goes into hibernate mode. A lot of the things that have been pretty unsatisfactory with Vista, frankly. And you know, the question is, can they make Windows 7 the operating system Vista should have been?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it doesn't sound as if there will be much to change there. If they don't want to have a huge upheaval between Vista and Windows 7, it sounds like we're going to get Vista, the Vista look and feel again. So I wouldn't imagine, especially as they've got the XML-based markup interface, which is the direction they're heading is the future. So it's kind of variations or incremental changes on the theme, it would sound like.
Yeah. Again, I'm going to be really curious how much we get to see and how forthcoming they are at the PDC about this.
Yeah.
And then we have another question from listener Josh Phillips with WindowsConnected.com, another really good site out there in the community of Windows enthusiast sites.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to know, when are we finally going to get Windows 7? And man, if they say anything about that, I will sure be surprised.
Yeah.
They've really been trying their best not to say anything on the date front, which, frankly, as I've written many times on my site, I think they're shooting themselves in the foot by doing this.
Well, they've kind of changed. I mean, Steven Sinofsky, who's in charge of Windows 7, essentially, he's the man who directly brought Office in on time. They wanted a man who can do, but he's also shutting down all the information about Windows 7, and I feel that's kind of hurting them in terms of, you know, what people are getting to hear about. They've gone from one extreme to the other, I feel.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I understand they're in between such a rock and a hard place right now because they want people to keep buying Vista or start buying Vista, depending on your,
yeah.
your outlook here.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're going to come out in 2 weeks and talk about the version of Windows after Vista. And, you know, they've tried to say publicly that the due date for Windows 7 is 2010. But everybody I talk to who's talking to Microsoft says they're telling them quietly 2009.
Yeah.
So that's next year. So if I'm a user and I'm still running XP, why would I upgrade to Vista right now if the next version of Windows is next year?
Yeah. Well, I know that there's a lot of people concerned about what is happening to Vista. I mean, I wrote the story about, you know, the downgrade rights to XP is being broadened out for another 6 months for OEM, so people can still get XP. It sounds like Vista is very much going to be the ghost of the feast on this one, and you know, it's a fact of life that, you know, Microsoft, it's an uncomfortable fact of life for them. They've got it, it's shipping, they want people to buy it, and yet they've still got to push developers towards the future, which is Windows 7.
Another listener also has asked us an equally provocative and related question. How has the silence around Windows 7 affected your view of its development? I mean, that's another whole can of worms there because, you know, is Microsoft telling customers, especially enterprise customers, enough for them to plan around? You know, do enterprises who are making the decision right now whether they should upgrade to Vista or wait for 7 have enough real information about what 7's going to be like to make an informed decision?
Now, as I said, we've got, you know, WinHEC, Windows Hardware Engineering Conference, is literally a week or so after PDC. The OEMs, anyone who's interested in building for Windows 7 is surely going to go to WinHEC. They're not going to expect serious information to come out of PDC, and yet they're still pushing PDC as being the showcase on Windows 7, judging by these sessions. They're all very deep and technical. It sounds like they've kind of got a bit of a crisis of conference planning there.
Yeah, it was definitely weird timing to put those two shows back to back. But you know what I'm hearing a little bit about WinHEC, which might make it interesting, is I hear they're going to talk there about Windows Server 2008 R2, which is Windows 7 server.
Mm.
And you know, if you're a developer and you're trying to think about building applications that use both the client and the server, and you want to make sure that you're planning correctly so that those two things can stay in sync when people are deploying, you might weigh more heavily towards WinHack than you will towards the PDC.
Yeah, and also let's not forget, it's probably a slightly different crowd. Developer PDC is for the software people. WinHack is clearly for the hardware people, so you're going to get a slightly different contingent going to that. So I know I wanted to bring in Jim Zemlin, who's chairman of the Linux Foundation, who's got a few kind of a counter viewpoint on what's going on in Windows. So Jim, just what we've been talking about Microsoft's Professional Developer Conference, which is coming up at the end of October. We're just kind of chatting about Windows 7 on desktop and the server. Obviously you're kind of one of the biggest spokespeople for Linux. So obviously you're kind of provide a counter view to Windows. Wanted to get your thoughts on what you're hearing, if anything, about Windows 7 and Windows for the server. Should Linux be worried, basically, especially in the area of high performance computing?
And clearly in the server world, Windows is a tough competitor, but in the high performance computing end, we're just not hearing a lot.
What areas do you think Microsoft needs to look at with the next version of Windows on the desktop or the server?
In areas like hosted software, clustering, high performance computing, you call it cloud computing or whatever you want.
Yeah.
I think that's an area where Microsoft is very weak, where, you know, in fact, particularly in supercomputing, it's actually the reverse market share of Linux versus Windows to the desktop, right? You know, Linux literally has 85-90% market share in that high end of the computing world.
Why do you think is it from a technical basis that they're weak? Why are they kind of suffered so badly in the cloud? And the cloud is particularly relevant now, given all the hype we're hearing.
Yeah, I mean, it's traditional. Things that reasons that most people understand pretty well. It's price performance. It's the ability to be able to modify code, and certainly in these large computing environments, the people who offer them at scale want to be able to make modifications to their system in a very deep way in order to increase the power of the systems, in order to improve the price performance of those systems. You know, it's, and then technically, you know, the Linux platform is just runs incredibly well in these type of environments. So you've got, you know, a technical reason, you've got a price reason, then you've got a flexibility reason. So that combination is pretty daunting.
The story of Microsoft is, and Novell learned this, a very painful lesson, is that Microsoft improves over time. And they did that with Windows NT, and Windows NT became very well established in the server, operating in a server room. Do you think that in the era of high-performance computing, in the era of, which is, you know, and massive server farms, which will be running these cloud services, and which Microsoft will no doubt be pushing the next server version of Windows, does Linux have a weak spot? Can and will Windows improve over time to the point where it should be worried?
Well, Linux isn't going to be standing still either. So, yeah, I agree that Microsoft will improve over time. The question is, Will Linux be standing still while they move ahead? And that's certainly not the case. It's really the pace at which either platform moves ahead. And there's just endless statistics on the number of developers participating in Linux. You know, the broad set of stakeholders out there that have a vested investment to continue to innovate. The willingness of the technical leadership within the Linux community to really push the envelope in terms of the innovation that they can do. So, you know, I just think that it's almost common knowledge these days that an open development process is a very, very formidable competitor when it comes to trying to out-innovate. And so, while I do agree that Microsoft will improve their platform over time, I don't believe that they'll be able to improve it at the pace at which the Linux ecosystem does.
Do you think we'll see Microsoft Cloud Services kind of overtaking, becoming more popular? You know, more cloud services running on Windows over time?
I think they'll have a bet in that market, but I don't. You know, I mean, they're late to the party, right? There's already lots of Linux-based services out there that are deploying real systems today, where, you know, every day those providers become more experienced. You have huge organizations that are placing strategic bets on those type of services. You know, almost every major, IBM, Hewlett-Packard, Oracle, Intel, all these guys are placing bets, and those are Linux-based bets. So, collectively, I think, those folks have a head start. Linux has a head start, and while Windows and Microsoft will have an offering there, I think that they've got a long way to catch up, and I'm not assuming everyone else is going to stand still.
Windows 7 and the Linux desktop, we've always heard about the Linux desktop, it's always the year of the Linux desktop. Yeah. They've stumbled badly with Vista. Windows 7, do you think that they could get their act together again and come back, or is Linux going to kind of nibble away at that desktop?
Yeah, this is an area where I'm really bullish on relative to Linux, and that Linux desktop might not be something that a consumer sees as the Linux brand necessarily, but I'm very bullish on the future of a desktop computing environment that's powered by Linux. Mm. And let me explain what I mean by that. There's a new category of computing emerging on the desktop that will be very difficult for Microsoft to fundamentally compete in, to structurally compete in. And that's on the lower end of the PC world, on categories of computing that people are calling netbooks these days, or mobile internet devices, or even smartphones. The reality is that the way people are experiencing the killer application for a PC, the internet, is in many cases, and in increasingly in more cases, through a notebook computer. And a large community in the world are experiencing that through a phone for the first time. And so my theory is that PCs are going to start to get to look a lot more like a mobile device or a cell phone, and cell phones and mobile devices are going to look a lot more like a PC. And in that world, I think that PC experience is what most people are used to on the internet, the experience that they prefer. And when you're talking about $200-$300 notebooks that are primarily used to access the internet or web-based services, Microsoft has an incredibly structurally difficult time of participating in that market, because that market is fueled by a low-cost bill of materials, where a vendor creates a notebook at that price point by not paying a license fee to Microsoft. It's something that is primarily used to access the web through a browser, not exactly something that you need this huge desktop overhead to do. It's something where, in order to get margin for the companies that are producing these devices, they want to have the value-add brand that they represent highlighted in that notebook. And Linux is something that can be custom branded, and you're seeing this now from companies like Asus and others. And so, the ability to custom brand an operating system, the ability to do it at an extraordinarily low cost without a license fee, these are things that are just structurally almost impossible for Microsoft to compete with unless they mark their price to zero and allow people to call Windows something different.
Well, do you think they can get their game face on with Windows 7, or is it kind of the market's changed for them? They've lost their footing.
I think that unless Windows 7 is something that will change with the market I've just described, that they're going to have a very difficult time. And I find it hard to believe that they would, with Windows 7, start to allow ODMs to custom brand it. I don't think they're going to mark the price to zero. And so it would take a monumental shift that I'm not seeing.
Thank you, Jim, of the Linux Foundation. So, MJ, there's obviously one thing we haven't discussed yet that's getting a lot of people very excited, and that is Silverlight.
I keep hearing there's some connection between Silverlight and Live Mesh.
Right.
And I've heard people speculating that Microsoft's going to somehow meld those two things, so that if you want to build an application that's Live Mesh, an application that is Silverlight enabled, that it's somehow going to work with Live Mesh, and it'll be more easily meshifiable, or, like I said, I'm very fuzzy and vague on this, but I am not surprised they're going to try to tie more tightly Live Mesh with Silverlight, because they're two kind of up-and-coming technologies, that neither of which has much of a market. Well, Live Mesh has none so far, but neither of which has much market share, and they need to find a way to kind of increase the dependencies, I think, to help build the market for those.
Well, so I was speaking to somebody this week who said, you know, this is one of the guys who helped create Apple QuickTime, and he really could, and he's got a background, but he doesn't work for them anymore. And so he was saying, cannot see the reason why we need Silverlight. We've already got Flash. I think, to be fair to Microsoft, they're trying to do something a little different to Flash. They're trying to stitch it together with workflow capabilities like, WF.
Yeah.
And they're trying to bridge that whole chasm between developers and designers, which people have been trying to do for decades now. I think you're right. I think there is some kind of work trying, you know, at the highest level to try and get Silverlight, you know, interlocked with Mesh, to get it interlocked with Windows Workflow. So you've got this, not just this player, but you've also got this thing that can integrate with workflows and business processes and can work over a distributed cloud as well. So it's this very ubiquitous media kind of environment that can play almost anywhere.
Yep, definitely.
And also, dare I say, it's probably an SOA play in there as well. But of course, that's at the very high level. It's when you get down to the details that, you know, it becomes very much harder, and you have to focus, you have to hold on to what's tangible. And I think what we've got so far is a media player that plugs into the browser, and that's Silverlight. With that said, a lot of people are very excited about it, aren't they?
They are very excited about it. I think what the main thing is that people are going to be watching for with Silverlight 2 is the cross-platform story, like Jim Zemlin was just talking about.
Mm.
You know, right now they haven't really talked about how .NET works with Silverlight and how Silverlight's going to work across anything other than Windows. I mean, they've talked about the Mac, but we haven't seen a lot of tangibles there. So, and the other thing we've heard nothing about is Silverlight on mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a session at the PDC I saw on developing Silverlight 2 apps for Windows Mobile, which I bet a lot of people will go to because it's an area where everyone assumed Microsoft's going to be doing something, and they, of course, they've got to be doing that, but there's been absolutely no information on it so far.
Well, I was speaking to Scott Guthrie a few months back when they had Remix 08 down in the Valley, and he was saying they were going to do deals with the handset providers. He promised big deals coming with handset providers. That's obviously the next step. I mean, it's critical that the handset providers allow Silverlight to be embedded on their, to download and install on their handsets.
Yeah.
And that's the missing part of the equation if they want to nail up that mobile side of the fence.
Definitely. And, you know, the whole idea that was so important at Mix about Microsoft making the CLR cross-platform and able to work on a multitude of devices and different operating systems with different browsers. I mean, this is how that's going to be realized in large part, is with Silverlight 2.
Okay, well, let's just wrapping up a little bit. The Balmer Mood Index, Todd Bishop's patented Balmer Mood Index. You know, Steve-O is kind of emblematic of the company, really, isn't he?
He is. Wherever Steve goes, Microsoft goes. And what Todd did at the Seattle PI before he left there was very interesting. He had a little kind of an icon at the bottom of the paper where he talked about Balmer's mood of the week. And as anyone who knows Balmer knows, the guy is very emotional. And to put it nicely, some people say nut job instead of emotional.
Yeah.
But, I think if we were looking this at kind of all the events of this week and how Steve B might be feeling at the end of this week.
Let's kind of break out. What are the categories, first of all? Is frustrated, intense, all business, not taking no for an answer, victorious, or Monkey Boy? And we all know what Monkey Boy means. So with PDC on the horizon, with the stock market tumbling, he was out last week, I think, kind of pumping up the clouds and saying, we've got something coming, we've got something coming. What do you feel? What is Steve-O's mood this week?
I think I'd have to go with business-like, given the somber mood on Wall Street this week. And I'm sure everybody at Microsoft must be wondering, you know, what's going to happen with all our enterprise sales and our enterprise customers, especially the holiday season coming up. You know, what's going to happen with the credit crunch affecting consumers? I think it must be a very somber time to be a tech vendor right now.
Well, with that, that's Microbyte. From the folks that bring you the register, biting the hand that feeds IT, this has been Microbyte. I'm Gavin Clark.
And I'm Mary. Mary Jo Foley. Thank you for listening. See you next time.
Thank you, and see you next time.